When Angela Yuan's son, Christopher, was expelled from dental school, Angela didn't give up hope.
And I thought, this is God's doing. I have to trust God because I've been praying. So maybe this is caught Christopher's attention.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth, author of Surrender, The Heart God Controls. For June 3rd, 2024, I'm Dana Gresh. Do you ever wonder if your prayers make a difference? If you love a prodigal, chances are you know what it's like to pray and pray without seeing any change happening. We're about to hear a powerful story of a mother's faithful prayers and how God works in the waiting. It's a story from Angela Yuan and her son, Christopher. In fact, they will both be joining us tomorrow night for a special online event called When You Love a Prodigal. I'll share more about that at the end of today's episode. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's subject matter contains some mature themes. If you have little ears listening, you may want to come back to this episode or occupy them elsewhere. Now, here's Nancy to start off her conversation with them.
Well, we're very blessed to have with us in the studio this week a mother and son who are here to share their journey of faith and the amazing, transforming, redeeming power of God in their lives. And as I've heard the story of Christopher Yuan and his mother, Angela, both of whom are with me here in the studio today, I'm just reminded of the story in Luke 15 of the prodigal son and how God is such a redeeming God, a reconciling God, a restoring God who brings hope out of hopeless places and light out of darkness and joy out of depression and discouragement. And that story of the prodigal son and his return home is so beautifully illustrated in the mom and son that we're going to hear from this week on Revive Our Hearts. So Angela Yuan and son Christopher, welcome to Revive Our Hearts.
Thank you so much for having us, Nancy.
Thank you for having us.
I want to take us back to that day in May of 1993 when Christopher, you had come home from dental school. You were in your junior year, and you were with your family at the dinner table. It was really tense. And I know, Angela, you remember that evening so clearly because you were getting ready to confront Christopher over something you had found. And just tell us how that evening unfolded.
Yeah, you know, actually, I remember Christopher came home. I thought he came home for the Mother's Day, the weekend before.
Right.
And he came back. I just thought, you know, I welcome him home. And because we haven't seen him for a month, you know. But just before he came home, my husband found a videotape in the crawl space. And I remember because the story had happened before, I was scared to look at the tape. And I told my husband to view the tape. And it happened. It was men's pornography.
Gay pornography.
So on the dinner table, I was hoping my husband would bring this up. But he didn't. So when I confronted him, I said, Christopher, are you still? And Christopher seems like he knew what we are talking about. He said, yes, Mom, I am gay.
So you're devastated.
I was so devastated.
Now, let's back up. There were a lot of things that led up to this moment, and your family was not Christian at that time. And Angela, you really had no interest in spiritual things or in the Lord at all at that point in your life, right?
No. As long as I do what I'm supposed to do the best I could, and be an honest person. And I don't need religion. I don't think there is a God.
And Christopher, for you, this wasn't just a sudden, you know, foray into this lifestyle. It's really something that started with exposure to pornography at an early age.
Very early age, Nancy, yeah. I recall back to when I was about 9 years old. We had some good friends of the family, and we would visit them over the summer. They were good friends of my parents, and we would, spend overnight at their place, and I found pornography in the bathroom. And I remember looking at it, and that was when I realized that I had this affinity toward the same gender, and I was scared. I believe I was about 9 years old. So that was probably the beginning of when I realized the kind of that struggle. But I kept just it pushed down and just hoping that it would go away, that it was just somehow some phase and I would just become like one of the other boys.
And so coming out of a Christian, non-Christian background where you weren't shepherded, you weren't protected, you had made some choices, then continuing into your teen years, and by the time you got to college or dental school, were you actively pursuing this homosexual lifestyle?
Well, you know, from like I said, through high school, college, I just kept those just feelings pushed down and in secret because I was really hoping that they would somehow go away. I even was in the Marine Corps Reserves for a little while, you know, thinking, well, maybe I can find my manhood this way and fit in. But they didn't go away. And so when I was in my early 20s, I went to dental school in Louisville, Kentucky. And that was finally when I came out of the closet. And I was open to my friends, my classmates there in Louisville. And that was after that first year in dental school at Louisville, University of Louisville, that's when I went home and had this confrontation with my mother.
And at this point, Angela, he says, I can't deny who I am. And he walks out the door?
Yes.
And leaves? You go back to school?
Mm-hmm.
And where does that leave you?
It left me just hopeless. And I was feel this is going to be the end of my life because there's nothing can hold me back on this earth.
Everything. So you felt there was nothing left to live for.
Yeah, I felt there's nothing I could live for. So I went to a minister and he gave me a pamphlet on homosexuality. And I, with the pamphlet, I went to the train station. I thought, well, at least I want to say goodbye to Christopher. On the train, I was reading that small pamphlet. I remember I was holding on that pamphlet and on the train and start reading that pamphlet. And that was the first time I understand the unconditional love. You know, I thought I love my children. I love my husband. And that was not it. And I understand what God's love. It's unconditional.
The pamphlet was talking about the love of God for us.
Because even though the pamphlet is talking about the homosexuality, but just show how God loved even homosexual. And even me as a sinner, you know, before I didn't realize I was a sinner. But on the train, I thought, am I a sinner? Even if I'm a sinner, God still can love me. That just blew my mind away.
So when you started that train trip, you could not have imagined how you could love Christopher.
Yeah.
When he was acting out this homosexuality?
Before, I just don't think I can ever love him because he said he was homosexual. But during that train ride, I think I should love my son, even though he said he was gay.
And part of that journey was coming to grasp that God loved you. That was a new understanding too, right?
Yeah. That's one thing because God can love me even though I was a sinner. Yeah.
So here you'd started out on that train ride intending to take your life.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, as you were encountering Christ, you were getting a whole new life.
Exactly. That was the time I experienced God.
The first time?
The first time.
So you were in a process of being spiritually awakened here.
Yes.
As you're heading on that train ride. Now, when you set out on the train, you were going to see Christopher and you were going to tell him goodbye. You were going to end your life.
Mm-hmm.
When you got to Louisville, you were in the process of being born again, getting a new life.
Uh-huh.
So, Christopher, do you remember when your mom came to see you in Louisville? What happened there?
I was not expecting at all. So she kind of showed up at the dental school. And I thought, what in the world are you doing here? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, finally, I've cut off my family. I don't need my family. I have my own.
This is just days after that dinner table conversation?
It was just days after. And, you know, in a sense, as I was going back to Louisville, I just felt freedom. And I just felt kind of this new life that I could begin with the baggage of my parents just you know, dropping away. And so when my mother showed up at the dental school in Louisville, it was like, what are you doing back in my life? You know, I wanted you out, but in my mind, it was my mother who kind of cut her out because she couldn't accept me. You know, I mean, I was justifying it. And so it was not what I wanted, not what I expected. But she came and said, I love you. I love
you. Which was really not what you expected.
Which was really exactly the opposite of what I wanted, because that was not playing into the narrative that all my friends had been telling me. But I just thought, okay, so what? You know, that's not going to change the way I'm going to act or live. I kind of just kept doing my thing. And my mother stayed there for 6 weeks, was discipled by another lady. And I knew that something was going on, but I just thought, well, maybe my mom's just kind of, you know, just kind of doing some crazy thing now. Let her do her own thing. But I'm just going to keep living the way I'm living.
Mm. And in the meantime, you're in the process of God's awakening you, drawing
yes.
him to himself, and you find a woman who gets you into the Word.
Yes.
How did you end up getting your first Bible?
You know, let me pull back a little bit. You know, just how amazing God prepared me after I realized that unconditional love from God. Then when I saw Christopher, I really have that love. I love you.
It's God's love.
It's God's love. Even though you told me you are gay, and even though you choose what I don't think it's the right thing you should do, but I still love you.
It's really impossible to express unconditional love if we haven't received it from God first.
Exactly.
For ourselves, if we haven't seen ourselves as sinners.
That's right.
That God has loved because of his mercy and his grace, then we have no love to be able to give to others. Angela, you're in the process of coming to a spiritual awakening, and you got this sudden new interest in reading the Bible.
Yeah.
And that was a whole new life for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I started reading the Bible from the morning. The first thing I get up in the morning, I didn't put it down until almost like 11 or 12 o'clock at the end, except I go to have my lunch or dinner.
That, you had this whole new hunger for God and his Word.
That was a miracle to me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe I didn't fall asleep. Usually, after 1 or 2 hours, I will become sleepy. The more I read, the more I want to read more. So I went to the Bible bookstore again to get more Christian book. I read Christian book after Christian book. I have a whole box of Christian book. And I read Bible and read Christian book. So that 6 weeks, I just totally immersed myself into the Bible.
So God was giving you a whole new life. Yeah. This one prodigal mother had come home, and you were experiencing God's love in a whole new way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Christopher, you're at this point really unfazed by all this Christian stuff your mom's getting into. It's not touching you at this point. What direction's your life heading?
Well, I kept doing my own thing, and I really enjoyed at that time my new freedom, my friends in the gay community. I, while in dental school, was going out and partying on the weekends and going out to the clubs. Unfortunately, I got involved in drugs. I was kind of in and out of relationships. But, you know, I was experimenting with drugs, but I didn't have a lot of money as a student. So I came up with this idea that, well, maybe I could sell a little bit of drugs to pay for my own habit. And that's how it began. Unfortunately, it grew to a point where I was selling a lot of drugs and making quite a bit of money to where I could travel a lot on the weekends. And that just kind of drew my emphasis away from school. And I would be absent on, you know, Fridays or Mondays because of I would have long weekends. And this went on for several years, to the point that finally the school kind of had enough. They didn't know that I was drug dealing. I think several of the students knew because I had sold drugs to some of the students and even to a professor. But it finally, you know, it was just the administration had enough and they expelled me from dental school. So then,
and you were like close to the end.
I was only about 4 months away from receiving my doctorate.
Didn't I read you to actually even order your cap and gown or something like that?
I ordered my cap and gowns. The invitations had gone out. I had finished part one and part two of the national boards for dentistry. And so I was already headed in that direction to become a dentist and to go on and be successful. But I finally was expelled from dental school.
Did they call you or you got a note or how did they tell you?
Well, I already was having problems with this school. This wasn't something just out of the blue.
Right.
I was kind of on probation. I was even suspended once because of just my grades and not being very serious about my school. And so it didn't come as a complete surprise, but it was a surprise in the sense that I didn't think that they would actually expel me. I thought that they would just kind of let me through.
So, Angela, in the meantime, you had been back in Chicago and you had really started praying.
Yes.
For Christopher. In fact, you had a special place in your house that you made into a prayer closet. Tell us about it.
Oh, when I get home, and that was a brand new home. We just finished the construction. We have a small shower in the master bedroom. And somehow I went in there, said, wow, this is a good place for us a prayer closet.
It's a shower you weren't using.
It's a shower we're not using. And also the contractor built a stool for me to sit on to wash my feet. And I convert the stool as a table. So I put my Bible and I also put the lighting in there. So that was my prayer closet.
And, of course, all this time, a big item on her prayer list, maybe the number one, she's praying for her son, Christopher.
Was me. Yes.
And you didn't know it and didn't really
no
care.
Clue.
And God had been so working in your heart, Angela, that you had come to a place where you weren't going to enable him in a sinful lifestyle. So we got in that meeting and you spoke to the dean. You said something that Christopher didn't expect.
Yes. I also have to say, when I was praying and studying the words, and I realized God is working in my children's, not just I have to do something. And I also see the picture that I should stay away, let God working.
Not interfere.
Not interfere with what God was going to do in my son's life. And I thought, this is God's doing. I have to trust God because I've been praying. So maybe this is caught Christopher's attention.
To get expelled from dental school.
To get expelled. Because in my mind, I don't think anything is more important to have my son, Christopher, to know God.
You know, it's really interesting. I'm thinking about, again, the story of the prodigal son and how that dad, there's no indication that he went after his son in that far country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to want to and probably could have had some influence, but he waited for that son to come to the end of himself. And I think what you've just described is a picture of that. And how often do parents, well-meaning parents,
mm-hmm.
rescue their children from the cross? From the very circumstances God is wanting to use to bring those children to the end of themselves. And I know it's not always the same answer in every situation, and that's why parents have to be so prayerful and discerning. But in this case, you stepped back. You said, we're not going to interfere
mm-hmm.
with what God is doing. And imagine if you had interfered. He finishes dental school, becomes a dentist, but
yeah.
his heart's not,
exactly.
He doesn't become a follower of Christ.
Yes.
What's the point?
My
That's
heart
right.
probably would have been even hardened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you were furious at the moment.
I was.
But you look back now and you realize how much God loved you and how much your parents loved you to let you get thrown out of med school.
But my parents were hoping that was rock bottom.
Yeah. I was hoping, oh, this is the rock bottom, please.
And they were
yeah.
hoping that things would turn around as a result of this.
Mm. And from all appearances, it didn't.
It did not. It did not. Things got worse, much worse. So instead of kind of me waking up and finding out this is I need to change, I just picked up and I moved further away from Chicago and moved from Louisville, Kentucky to Atlanta, Georgia. I already had some friends there. I had some people that I was kind of selling drugs with, doing a lot of partying there. And my kind of drug business just exploded, and I became not just a drug dealer but a supplier. And I was supplying drugs to dealers in over a dozen states. I was very kind of active in the gay community, very popular. I mean, I felt like I was larger than life. Unfortunately, I was living very promiscuous life as well. And, you know, just further and further and further away from God.
Kind of becoming your own God.
I was becoming my own God. And you know, I love where it says in Romans 1 that I was, you know, believing the lie that I was worshiping the creature, myself, rather than the Creator. So this whole time, all of this was going, and this happened over a couple of years, just headed, we just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And my parents had hoped that things would get better. And they were praying and praying, and things just did not get any better.
But you did not give up knocking on heaven's door.
No.
You kept praying.
Yes.
And for 7 years, something like that?
For 7 years.
Without any evidence that God was hearing or answering those prayers. What kept you praying?
You know, I think it's just God's word. You know, every time I read God's word, He never gives up on us. And I also have the picture of that persistent widow. It's just knocking on God's door. You know, sometimes maybe I'm not the first on the line, you know, so I want to get up early in the morning and just knock on his door, you know, and praying and crying. And I
was fasting.
My mom fasted every Monday for 7 years.
And then even an extended fast at one point?
She once just began fasting, and she just felt, well, I'm going to fast until God tells me to stop. And she fasted for 39 days.
And from all appearances, you were impervious to all of this.
Completely.
Was having no effect. But God gave you the faith and the grace to keep knocking on heaven's door. And you even prayed that God would help you not to give up, right?
Yeah. And I just believe God's promise.
Often my mom, I mean, my mother would try to reach out, and it's just not hearing anything is probably the worst that any parent could
for years.
So, and it's really easy to be consumed and to dwell on that. But I think during that period, my mother would consciously just make a decision every morning to go into that prayer closet, to open up her Bible. And that was the way of taking the focus away from me and the circumstances and the storms and the tragedy, and put the focus back upon the face of Jesus. And even today, my mother on her bathroom mirror has the hymn, "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus," because that was the first thing in the morning. She wanted to get her focus back on track and put it back upon Jesus.
I love when I heard you say recently that you chose not to focus on the hopelessness.
Yes.
But to focus on the promises of God.
Exactly.
And we're going to continue this story. And God is working in Christopher's life, even though he doesn't realize it at this point. And I know our listeners want to hear that. But I think just even what's been shared today is such a ministry to some moms, some grandmoms, who are tired of praying, tired of crying out, tired of not seeing answers. And I think your story, Angela, just says to them, hang on to the Lord.
Yes.
Wait for the Lord. Mm-hmm. Be of good courage. Don't give up. Keep praying. My life is the result, humanly speaking, of a praying great-grandmother, my Greek Yaya, who I never knew, but who laid hold of the Lord and prayed for my dad's salvation. I don't even think she ever lived to see him come to faith. But I look at the power of those years of praying on her knees, sometimes through the night, as the testimony has been told. And I know there's some moms out there who need to be encouraged to keep seeking the Lord.
Yes, as Nancy DeMoss Walgamuth just reiterated, don't give up praying for your prodigal child or loved one. God is at work, whether or not you see him. He is at work in your prodigal's life and in yours. You know, I'm really excited because both Christopher and Angela Yuan will be joining us tomorrow night for a special online event called When You Love a Prodigal, Hope-Filled Wisdom while you wait. The heartbreak of loving a prodigal is very real, but so is the hope of the gospel. Angela knows that well, as we just heard in her story today. Angela and Christopher will be joined by Mary Cassian, Joni DeBrito, and Aaron Davis to bring you encouragement, wisdom, and hope while you wait for your prodigal. This is the first event in the Biblical Help for Real Life series from Revive Our Hearts. The single event registration is just $29, or you can bundle all four events in the series and save on your total cost. Get the details and register at reviveourhearts.com/help. I also want to tell you about our newest print resource called While You Wait for Your Prodigal, a 30-day prayer challenge. You'll walk through specific scripture passages over the course of 30 days, passages that'll help you seek God in His Word and prayer. Plus, you'll find prompts to reflect on and space to journal your prayers for the prodigal you love. You can get a copy of While You Wait for Your Prodigal with your donation of any amount to Revive Our Hearts. It's a way we'd like to thank you for your support of this ministry. Visit reviveourhearts.com or call us at 1-800-569-5959. Tomorrow, we're going to hear the rest of the story and find out what happened to Christopher. You won't want to miss that episode. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. This program is a listener-supported production of Revive Our Hearts in Niles, Michigan, calling women to freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ.